Coming to you from the mountains and the plains, the only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Altman.
That's what the Second Amendment was designed to do. If you're going to do something to nullify or take away my rights under the Constitution, come get it.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance.
And now your hosts, Joe Altman and Max McGuire.
And welcome back to another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire. Joe had to step out. He might join us midway. I'm not sure, but he won't be here for the start. So I'm going to get it started solo so we can make sure we get started on time. And hopefully Joe can join us halfway through. Lots of stuff to talk about. Today's podcast, probably we're going to devote all two hours of it to going through the things that Joe Biden plans to do on his first day. Because it is a picture that leaked out and it is absolutely terrifying. It should be terrifying to anyone who is a conservative. Well, let's go ahead and put it up real quick, Mr. Producer. Image number one. We're going to go through all of this. This is the document that leaked out of the Office of President-Elect. So we're going to be going through all of this stuff in depth, each and every one of these, and also talking about executive orders, things he's planned that isn't on the list, because these things are he basically defines it as four crises. And yes, he says LGBTQ plus. We have an LGBTQ plus crisis in this country, according to Joe Biden and his staff. So we can go ahead and take that image down. We're going to be doing a deep dive into that. Got to get started, though, by letting everyone know that we received our first warning from YouTube yesterday. A video that we put out talking about impeachment, explaining the reasons that Donald Trump wanted the Electoral College results to be challenged, explaining why people in Congress challenged it. We received a warning from YouTube for violating their terms of service. So that video was taken down. So the next time we talk about the things that we're not allowed to talk about, which everyone on this show knows what I'm talking about, the next time we do it or YouTube insinuates that we do it, we will lose access to our YouTube page for a week. So we're really going to avoid talking about this anytime that we stream on YouTube. Joe had a stream on DLive yesterday where he talked about it at length. That'll be where we have to do that because we can't risk until we get everything built out for all of our different tech platforms that we're building. We cannot risk being kicked off of YouTube for relitigating something that we spent a month and a half doing in the month of November and first half of December. It just isn't worth it. Anyone who wants to know what we thought on the issue can go ahead and watch our previous episodes, but it just isn't worth it to relitigate it right now. It isn't. We have to fight this looking at the total war, not just to try and win a single battle. And right now the war is best won by us staying on YouTube until it's time for us to leave. So just want to do a little bit of housekeeping. That's why you're not going to hear us talk about that whenever we're streaming on YouTube. And if we have to talk about it, we'll be going exclusively on DLive and other platforms. Okay. That little bit of housekeeping out of the way. Joe Biden will be sworn in tomorrow. There's no hopium left. The moving truck was seen at the White House and the moving truck was seen at Mar-a-Lago. The Trump family is leaving the White House. There is no last minute change swooping in. Joe Biden will be inaugurated tomorrow at or around noon. And Donald Trump is leaving earlier in the day. The reporting I've heard is that typically the president will leave on Marine One, but he's leaving earlier so he still has access to Air Force One. He can go to Mar-a-Lago and not just go to Andrews Air Force Base. So that's going to happen tomorrow. Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated. Kamala Harris has already resigned. She did so on Monday, her Senate seat. This is going to happen tomorrow. And what we're hearing from the Biden team is that there is going to be a flurry of executive orders and other executive actions and memorandum that Joe Biden is going to sign. So this episode, both hours, we're going to be spending that time doing a deep dive, explaining what he plans to do, why it's important, and what Donald Trump did that has the left so pissed off about it. But this is a great opportunity to remind everyone, hit that share button. Very important. Hit the share button on Facebook. Hit the share button on YouTube. Like, comment, share, subscribe on YouTube and on DLive. If you haven't already, make sure you hit that follow button. We're growing our followers pretty fast on DLive. Not sure if the lemons are going to come back, Not sure, but we did add a panel in DLive for you to donate. So there's a donate panel. If you scroll down in DLive, it should be right there to get around the lemon band. Make sure you do all that, because today's episode is in honor, is dedicated to the Never Trumpers. Today's episode is dedicated to the conservatives who cared more about stopping the mean tweets than preserving the conservative agenda that Donald Trump enacted. This show is dedicated to all, and we all know who they are. We all have people like that in our life, people who identify as conservative but still either pulled the lever for Biden or refused to pull the lever for Trump, especially the ones who lived in the swing states where it mattered, because it was still close. No matter what you think happened, it was still very close in those states. This is dedicated to them. And we're going to see what we're going to inherit, in part because those constitutional conservatives, those those holier-than-thou conservatives, decided that they cared more about ideological purity than making sure that Joe Biden, the leftist agenda, did not invade the White House. So let's go ahead and put up that image one again. We're going to go down this list one by one. So the first promise right there, Wednesday, January 20th, Inauguration Day and the four crises. Joe Biden's going to tackle COVID. He's going to sign an executive order establishing White House and federal government structure for the COVID response. That's what he's promising to do. So you can go ahead and take that down, Mr. Producer. We'll keep going back to it throughout. I want to play a little bit from one of the debates where Joe Biden claimed that Donald Trump didn't have a plan. This is, if we had a truly honest media, they would make this the lie of the year. To say that Donald Trump went all the way through that pandemic through October and had no plan, that's just factually inaccurate. There were hundreds of press conferences, webpage after webpage, PDF file, hundreds of pages of plans. But I want to play that because this is the lie that was allowed to stick. Let's play cut number two. Not image number two. That's the...
Reconstruct Act to be able to go out there and dictate companies build and do following things.
That was cut number one. That was complete gibberish. So, Mr. Producer, play cut number two.
About between 750 and 1,000 people a day are dying. When he was presented with that number, he said, it is what it is. Well, it is what it is because you are who you are. That's why it is. The president has no plan. He hasn't laid out anything.
Just a lie. It's just simply a lie, right? Operation Warp Speed exists. That was a federal plan to coordinate vaccine and therapeutic development and distribution to fast track what Anthony Fauci a year ago said was impossible to do inside of a year. He said it would take 1 to 2 years to get a vaccine, and Donald Trump got a vaccine in less than a year. To say that there was no plan is just simply inaccurate. It's just a lie. And if you actually look at what Joe Biden plans to do, he's basically co-opting most of Donald Trump's plan and just calling it his own. When Donald Trump planned to have 100 million vaccine doses within Joe Biden's first 100 days, that was the timeline. If you remember, the Trump campaign got a lot of pushback by saying that we'd have 100 million doses by the end of quarter one of 2021, right? Q1. That's 90 days, give or take, into the year. That was Donald Trump's plan, to have 100 doses after Q1. And here Joe Biden's coming in saying, well, my big plan is that we're going to have 100 million doses in my first 100 days. It's the Trump plan. We're going to see this over and over and over again, co-opting the Trump plan after he said it didn't exist and just slapping his name on it. That's the Biden plan. I mean, he is a plagiarizer. It makes sense. His political career is littered with examples of him plagiarizing things. Even his slogan, Build Back Better, was stolen from the Brits. I mean, that was a British government slogan, Build Back Better. And he just stole it, unapologetically. So it is no surprise that he is once again now trying to try and steal Donald Trump's plans, the plans he said didn't actually exist, and just slap his name on it. Pretty incredible stuff. So let's go back to that image number one, Mr. Producer. We're going to keep going back to that over and over again, so have it on standby. The next one is his mask mandate, executive order. Now, go ahead and take it down. As we've talked about on the show, Joe Biden's promises have shifted a bit over time. Originally, he wanted a complete federal mask mandate. Everyone has to wear a mask. Someone then got to him and said, that's actually not constitutional. You can't just do that. Federal government has no power. So he started walking it back a little bit. We have a clip of the walk back. Let's go ahead and play cut number three.
One of our 100-day challenges is to mask up everyone. The day we're inaugurated, I'm going to ask you to mask up for the next 100 days. This is not a political issue. And I will issue an executive order to require masks where I have the authority to do that. For federal workers, in federal property, on interstate travel, like trains and planes. We'll also be working with mayors and governors in red states and blue states and ask them to require masking up in their cities and their states.
I cut it. So that was the new one. We have another clip. Let's go to cut number four.
People don't like masks. A matter of fact, they could be worse. And I think, don't hold me to this because they didn't see it, they just saw it reported. And Stephanopoulos asked why. And he said, because waiters don't like them. Waiters touch the food and touch the mask. I mean, come on.
But what would happen if, say, a Republican governor pushed back on you on this? How do you get buy-in when it's become so politicized? Would you sign an executive order?
Well, the question is whether I have the legal authority as president to sign an executive order. We think we do, but I can't guarantee you that yet.
Okay? But if you did, you would.
If I did, I would.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I cut it. So the early drafts that we've seen show that the incoming Biden administration wanted to require masks. They kind of hinted at it with interstate travel. They're also still floating the idea of interstate commerce, which is a really strange overreach. Anyone who's ever studied constitutional law or the history of how the Constitution is interpreted knows that the interstate commerce clause is one of the most abused parts of the Constitution, and it gives the federal government the power to regulate how commerce is done across state lines. And considering how interconnected we are today, pretty much everything, every single thing that we do can be interpreted to have the interstate commerce clause applied, right? You drive down the road, the minute you hit an interstate, bam, that's interstate commerce, right? You buy something from the store, unless it was completely made in that state using all materials in that state. But even then, the federal government has argued that simply putting something for sale, even if it's made entirely within one state using only resources dug up and developed in that state, simply putting it up for sale and allowing someone from outside the state to come buy it, means it qualifies as interstate commerce. It's impossible to sell anything or buy anything in this country without the federal government interpreting that it's falling under the interstate commerce clause. So one of the things that the Biden campaign was floating, and they're still considering it, trying to figure out whether they have the authority to do it, is to force people to wear masks anytime they're doing anything related to interstate commerce. The idea being that the federal government has the right to regulate interstate commerce, commerce across state lines. And if you are not wearing a mask, you risk spreading the virus through interstate commerce. But as he mentioned, he wants to make it on planes. Well, every plane already mandates it. Put it on trains. Amtrak already mandates it. I mean, you might be able to find a commercial train company that's hauling freight that doesn't make the conductor, when he's sitting up there all alone, wear a mask. Maybe they could go after him. I mean, what does this mean? Are people going to be driving on interstate highways in the car with their loved ones and have to wear masks? What does this mean? And we've also heard them talking about pit stops on interstate highways, that technically that qualifies as interstate commerce. I mean, what they're considering doing with this mask mandate, it's not what he originally said, which is everyone wear a mask, no exceptions. They realized that was very, very unconstitutional to design it that way. But trying to build it up around the interstate commerce clause and interstate commerce regulatory powers is what's very, very frightening, because that is something that has been abused over the years to pretty much allow the government to regulate anything. There's not a whole lot out there that doesn't at least touch the interstate commerce clause. So, Mr. Producer, go ahead and put up image number one again. Let's put up that image. The next on that list is a letter to rejoin the World Health Organization. Now, Donald Trump signed an order withdrawing from the World Health Organization because the Trump administration determined that the World Health Organization cared more about making China happy than protecting the health of the world. It wasn't the World Health Organization. It became the Chinese Health Organization. But even that's a little weird because they weren't even focused on keeping China healthy, just kind of focused on tamping down all the news about the coronavirus. This is a clip. We played it a while ago on the podcast, but I wanted to bring it up again. This is an interview that a reporter was doing with a WHO official where she brought up just the idea of the WHO recognizing Taiwan as a member. And the WHO official abruptly just decides that's it. So let's go ahead. This is an oldie. Anyone who's watched the podcast for a while remembers the last time we played this, but it's definitely a good one. Let's go ahead and play cut number seven.
WHO consider Taiwan's membership? Hello?
I couldn't hear your question.
Okay, yeah. Let me repeat the question.
No, that's okay. Let's move to another one then.
Right, because I'm actually curious on talking about Taiwan as well, on Taiwan's case.
We decided to give Dr. Alward another call to follow up.
And I just want to see if you can comment a bit on how Taiwan has done so far in terms of containing the virus.
Well, we've already talked about China.
So anyone listening to the audio version, that awkward silence was the WHO official pretending that he didn't hear the question. And then when she says, okay, let me ask again, he says, oh no, just switch, go to another one. Well, how could he know to go to another one if he didn't hear it? It was a complete lie. And then he cuts off. He just ends the Skype call. They call him back and she's, okay, let's just ask you this. How is Taiwan doing? A very fair thing. How is Taiwan doing addressing the virus? And the WHO official says, well, we've already talked about China. Why is this important? The Chinese government does not recognize Taiwan as an independent entity. They believe Taiwan is China. So there is no such thing as Taiwan. To the Chinese, it is just China. So this seems like something very subtle, but the WHO refusing to even say the word Taiwan, it is a surrender to China. It is WHO's, apparently it's their policy, to pretend also that China controls Taiwan, that Taiwan is China. So when you see Donald Trump withdraw from the WHO, it's not to hurt people, right? It's not to make people unhealthy. It was a recognition that the WHO does not have the world's best interests at heart. You cannot have the world's best interests at heart as long as you are refusing to even recognize the existence of a country because China doesn't want you to. As long as China has that kind of power, they can never truly be an independent body. So Donald Trump signed an executive order to pull all funding from the WHO and to redistribute it to organizations that actually had the world's health in mind and organizations that would provide for the health for the American people. Now, Joe Biden is going to undo that on day one. He's going to unfreeze all that funding and basically send it all back to the WHO. WHO that even they confess lied to the world and got things very, very wrong. This is not America first. This isn't even America second, America third. This is America last. Joe Biden is going to run an America last government. And again, I will say it. If you know anyone who's one of those never Trump conservatives who just couldn't find their way to pull the lever for Trump, send this to them because this is what they're inheriting. This is what we inherit because they demanded ideological purity. Let's go back to image number one. So that's all the health issues. Then it gets to climate. Rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. Mr. Bruce, go ahead and put up my screen. This is from theguardian.com. Biden to hit the ground running as he rejoins the Paris Climate Accords. Now, Donald Trump withdrew from the Paris Climate Accords because, much like the WHO, they don't have the United States' best interests at heart. They are worried about other countries. So let's take this down. Let me explain what the Paris Climate Agreement was. The Paris Climate Agreement was an international agreement put together primarily by the United Nations. It was going to be a treaty, but the Obama administration did not want to make it a treaty because they knew that a treaty would have to go through the Senate, the ratification clause of the United States Constitution. So they worked with the UN and these international bodies and foreign leaders to craft an agreement in a way that Barack Obama could sign on to it without requiring Senate ratification. Now, Obama did this throughout his 8 years. Anytime he knew he couldn't get something through the United States Congress or specifically the Senate, he would just go it alone through executive order or by signing these international agreements that don't rise to the level of a treaty, but still allow him to abide by the terms through his executive order. So one of the terms within the Paris Climate Agreement that Obama agreed to was to voluntarily send $3 billion to help the Paris Climate Agreement get off the ground. Now, what was that $3 billion going to go to? It wasn't going to go to our people. The way the Paris Climate Agreement was structured, it was going to redistribute that wealth around the globe. So the United States, wealthy country, they were going to take our $3 billion and give it to other countries to develop their own industrial sectors and energy sectors. So the agreement promised to give this to developing countries. But when we actually read the fine print, it considered things like India and China to be a developing country. So the insanity of it was we were going to tax Americans, send that money overseas so that our direct competitors, China and India, could revamp their industrial and energy sectors to compete with American industry. We've talked on the podcast before about just how many millions of jobs have been siphoned out of the United States and to these other countries over the previous decades. This would have basically created a renewal of that Clinton era policy. Except in this case, instead of just opening up the trade barriers to allow them to siphon off, we'd actually be paying them to upgrade their factories, right? So they can push out more cheap product to compete with American product. It was completely idiotic. And to treat China as if it's a developing country, that's insulting itself. And the Paris Climate Agreement did not require any hard set reductions in CO2 emissions. So they were going to give our wealth to China, India, other countries without even forcing them, without even binding them to certain CO2 emission targets. But the Obama administration, they wanted to implement their own clean energy agenda. Right, to regulate power plants, right? The Clean Power Plant Executive Order, which Trump rescinded. That was going to take what was optional for the Chinese and make it mandatory for the United States. So not only would we be funneling our money overseas to help them compete, but we'd be taking the things that they were going to have voluntarily placed on them and make it mandatory here to make our industries fight even harder to compete. Right? And so all put together, the Paris Climate Agreement was designed to destroy American industry and to basically redistribute American wealth abroad. Redistribute American wealth abroad. And that is one of the things that Joe Biden is going to make sure he does on day one, rescinding that. And because it's created as an agreement and not a treaty, he can do that without congressional ratification. One of the things that we called on Trump to do very early on, after the election was over, was to send the Paris Climate Agreement to the Senate for ratification. If he sent it to the Senate for ratification and the Senate turned it down, like rejected it, then at least there would have been a legal argument against Biden just trying to go it alone. But Trump didn't do that. It was another example of how he was not guided by the best advisors. And it's really unfortunate. Mr. Producer, put it back up, image number one. Join the Paris Climate Accord. Joe Biden wants to announce a date for a U.S.-hosted leaders climate summit. This is an interesting one. When Trump wanted to have world leaders, what was it, for the G8, G10, whatever it was, when Trump wanted to have those world leaders to the United States, the Biden campaign said it was reckless. You shouldn't be having world leaders come to the United States with the virus as bad as it is. But now Joe Biden's going to plan it. So it was bad when Trump wanted to do it. Trump bad, Biden good. Let's put that image up again. Trump bad, Biden good. Roll back Trump's actions via executive order, including an order to rescind the Keystone XL pipeline permit. This is a big one. A really big one. Spruce, put up image number two. Lots of people don't know what the Keystone XL pipeline is. It's actually not even the only pipeline. So there's an existing Keystone pipeline. There was an expansion pipeline to get to the Gulf Coast. And then there was what was called the XL. Let's keep this up for a little bit so people can see it. So you see in green there, it kind of it juts across Canada and then comes south through North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and then stops in Oklahoma. The Keystone XL pipeline basically wanted to cut this corner. They wanted to cut the corner. So instead of having to the pipeline jut all the way over to Winnipeg, it wanted to cut diagonally through Montana and South Dakota. It cut the corner. Less time, less energy, a lot easier to make sure, a lot easier to get the crude to market. It's common sense. The fact that they had to make that, I mean, anyone who's ever studied geometry knows that the hypotenuse of the triangle is shorter than the two legs added together. Obviously, cutting the corners, the shortest path. Well, the Obama administration didn't want to let them cut the corner. Oh, you're going to be going through Native American burial grounds. You're going to have to cross a river. That's bad. Oh, you're going to go through the sand hills. Oh, there's an aquifer. Listen, people, there's an aquifer everywhere. Everywhere in the country, you'll find an aquifer with very few exceptions. So the Obama administration didn't want to let them do that. The Trump administration, Donald Trump, approved the permit. So this has been ongoing. There's been some court battles, but they've been working on this. Now on day one, Joe Biden wants to rescind this Keystone XL pipeline, basically wasting the last 4 years, costing the company tons of money, and not actually doing anything. The oil will still reach the Gulf Coast. There are existing pipelines. It's just going to take longer. It's going to be more expensive to do it. And think about how many jobs that's going to destroy. There were jobs lined up to build this pipeline. Blue-collar jobs, union jobs. This is the group that the Democrats are supposed to support. Union jobs that were going to build this pipeline. But nope, day one, Joe Biden signing it away. Signing it away. Not actually doing anything, right? There will still be oil going through pipelines from Canada to the coast. But they won't be able to cut the corner anymore. Aren't we so glad Joe Biden won? Aren't we so glad that conservatives either stayed home or voted for Joe Biden? They're my friends. Don't we all love the Liz Cheneys of the world? The Paul Ryans of the world? Put up the image of the list again, Mr. Producer. So that's the first two, COVID and climate. This is going to be really hard to get through. This is a lot of BS. Racial equity. His first executive order is going to be whole of government racial equity effort announcement and executive order. So go ahead and take it down. So what I've been researching is that basically he's going to say that every single branch, department, agency in the federal government must prioritize racial equity. What does that mean? I have no idea what that means. But the only reason you get a racial equity executive order is if you truly believe that the United States is a racist country, right? The only way you can fight for equity is if you believe it isn't already equitable. So someone needs to show me real evidence of this. I hear lots of talk that, oh yeah, we're structurally racist, institutionally racist. We've had a podcast. Joe and I have not come to blows, but got very heated over it. And I think I won Joe over on that podcast. Anyone who hasn't watched it, go back and watch it. It was a very good podcast going through how the idea of structural and institutional racism is just bogus. But at some point, they should be forced to show the evidence of it, right? Anytime Donald Trump does a press conference, the leftist media loves to say he made an announcement without providing any evidence. But when Joe Biden signs an executive order insinuating that there is some kind of white supremacist hold on the federal government and that we are not an equal country anymore, they don't apply the same standard. They're not requiring him to show the evidence. They just accept it as fact. Oh, yeah, no, we're a very racist country. We're a very racist country. We're so racist. The world's black and brown people are fighting to come here. That's how racist we are. And we'll get to that in a second when we talk about him rescinding the travel ban executive orders. But no, we're a very racist country. We need racial equity. Racial equity in all sections of the government, everywhere. He wants that to be a priority. He wants that to be a priority. And we have a clip. We have a clip of Joe Biden promising just that. When he says racial equity, he means every single part of government, including COVID-19 response. Here's a clip of Joe Biden promising to put minority-owned businesses first when it comes to receiving government aid and assistance. Let's play cut number five.
Our focus will be on small businesses on Main Street that aren't wealthy and well-connected, that are facing real economic hardships through no fault of their own. Our priority will be Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American-owned small businesses, women-owned businesses, and finally, having equal access to resources needed to reopen and rebuild. But we're going to make a concerted effort to help small businesses in low-income communities, in big cities, small towns, rural communities that have faced systemic barriers to relief. Think of the mom-and-pop owner with a couple of employees who can't pick up the phone and call a banker, who doesn't have a lawyer, an accountant.
All right, let's cut it. We're going to prioritize businesses. He said, we're going to prioritize businesses owned by Black, Brown, Hispanic, what is it, Native American, and women. I just searched it, and 15% of the country's businesses are minority-owned. Now, I don't know whether that includes large businesses, small businesses, but they say 15%, and that makes sense, right? That makes sense. But those minority-owned businesses generated 3% of the nation's receipts of actual transactions. So when you actually look at the other 85% of the country's not minority-owned small businesses, they are generating 97% of the country's total financial transactions. But we're not going to prioritize that. We're going to prioritize the 15% that only generate 3% of all receipts and sales. Why? Because social justice, damn it. We have to make sure that we help them first. Listen, that's racist. Yeah, Mr. Producer just messaged me. Isn't that racist? Yes, that is racist. Anytime you're not just racist if you hate a particular race. You're also racist if you use race as a determining factor to help someone, right? It's all still racist. It's this idea that one race deserves something more than the other or deserves less than the other on the basis of their race. It is very racist to say that Black businesses are going to be put at the front of the line. That's going to be our priority. I'm not saying that they're not hurt. I'm not saying that they don't need help. But this is the man who said he was going to be a president for all Americans. He didn't say he's going to be a president for all Americans, but prioritizing all these different colors on the rainbow, but not white, all the other colors. That's not what he said. That we're going to bring the country together by putting white people at the back of the line. This is leftism. This is leftism. We said it before. Joe Biden is and always has been a Trojan horse candidate. He doesn't really believe a lot. He doesn't believe a lot. He didn't write these executive orders. Someone else wrote it. Right? The fact that they have these executive orders written before he's even sworn in tells me that he's basically just hired all the Obama people to undo what Trump did and to push the ball forward towards leftism. He doesn't actually know what he's doing. They're just telling him. He's a Trojan horse. Now, Kamala Harris, she has a head on her shoulders, as idiotic as her policies might be. She actually is able to think and speak about issues. Joe Biden's a mumbling mess. We played it at the start by accident, but let's go ahead and play cut one. This is a video of Joe Biden struggling to say the terms Defense Production Act when describing what his first executive order was going to be. Let's go ahead and play cut one.
We're going to employ the Defense Reconstruct Act to be able to go out there and dictate companies build and do following things.
So Trump already did that. Trump did that. Trump signed the Defense Production Act. He used that law to force companies to build ventilators, to build masks, to build other things that we needed. This is another example of Joe Biden just taking a Trump policy, slapping his name on it and saying, wow, aren't I great? Didn't I just make a great thing? This is what you voted for if you were conservative and you couldn't pull the lever for Trump because you didn't want the mean tweets. But hey, at least there won't be mean tweets. Joe Biden doesn't even know the password for his phone, most likely. Don't worry, there won't be any mean tweets. So we do have a caller. We have Suzanne on the line, wants to talk about the HR stuff in place related to all of these executive orders. Suzanne, how's it going?
Fine, Max. How are you today?
Pretty good, pretty good. How are you doing? So you work with the, are you in the federal government or are you contract with the feds?
No, I was a federal employee. I just retired after 30 years. I oversaw the HR and the workforce development / training for Army Contracting Command and Warrant.
Okay.
And workforce of about 1,000 people. So
you know a lot about the Obama era executive orders requiring that Army contractors hire diversity people, right? You've had to experience a lot of those executive orders, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the things that were already in place with regards to ensuring that there was a fair and equitable hiring across the board. Yeah, for some reason, I'm not hearing you.
Oh, I wasn't saying anything just now.
Okay. I'm looking
now?
At the TV. Yes, I can.
I'm just listening to you. So you worked in HR. Did you ever encounter any evidence that the federal government is racist in its hiring or advancement procedures?
So, yes, I did. But I will tell you, I get a lot of pushback against this. It was a lot of reverse discrimination. We were constantly being questioned if we dared to hire a non-minority person versus, and why did we hire that person versus the other? It didn't matter about qualifications anymore. It was about the numbers. And it was sad. I mean, we were responding to taskers constantly saying, we want you to give us a minority name for an award for like best engineer or best contractor, best procurement analyst, whatever. And I would question, shouldn't it be the best period? Why is it a minority when you are discriminating from the non-minorities? It was to the point where you really were being unfair to the non-minorities when it came to hiring. And I will tell you, I didn't have to retire. I was too young. I mean, I retired at 60. However, I could not deal with the discrimination anymore against the non-minority.
So when you hear Joe Biden say that he wants equity in things like hiring, what I'm hearing you describe is that equity would actually result in more white people being hired. Or at least more managers coming and saying, hey, I want you to hire a white person for this role, as opposed to say, like, equity is not, we need more of this than that. Equity is supposed to be like parity, not necessarily one-to-one, but at least representative of the demographics of the country.
Correct.
So why do they call it equity?
Well, that's a good question. We would get pushback if we would submit an application for a hire, and it was indicated that he was Caucasian or she was Caucasian. They were vetted by a panel. They were found the most qualified. It did not matter. Our EEO office would push back and say, why didn't you hire this minority instead? And it's like, it's not about the color of their skin. This is, we have war fighters that we are ensuring, we've got the best qualified
national security.
People. That's exactly right. And it was like, don't tell me to hire somebody who is less qualified when the end result can impact a war fighter. You're putting somebody's life on the line when you're telling me to hire a less qualified individual. That's ludicrous.
So when you work with contractors, were you working with like actual like contractors, like a defense contractor overseas performing some kind of security work, or did you do that? And also, because usually when I think of defense contractors, it's a lot of times the government puts out a contract that says, okay, we need 1,000,000 bullets, and then people rush to try and compete to earn that contract. And that, to me, this idea of like, okay, we need to buy body armor for the troops. We can either buy it from the person that has the best body armor and is going to keep us safe, or we can basically go with a minority-owned business that's never done it before. They specialize in, I don't know, pastries. I don't know, something different. It's just insane to me.
So So I work, when I say I work for the contracting command, I worked for Army. We would, our contracting officers and our contracting analysts would work with the contracting companies who were submitting the bids.
Gotcha, okay.
Then they would turn around, then they would continue that relationship until such time as, you know, they went to production and we are now submitting or sending out all of the equipment.
Yeah.
The reality is those contracting agencies we are working with, absolutely, they're submitting their bids, but they do have special dispensation if they're a small minority-owned business.
Oh, yeah.
They do target
those
first.
There's all those kind of things, yeah. So was there ever an instance, you remember where, because the government's supposed to go, do the lowest bid. Unless the lowest bid, the quality is like completely terrible, they're supposed to do the lowest bid. Was there, were there any instances where you saw the government deliberately pay more for something because they wanted to go with a minority owned business?
So, you know, there's instances where we had some individual, some organizations would, they would call it contract offloading, and they would basically give a contract to a company who then offloaded to another company, and it wasn't necessarily the lowest bidder. That's illegal. So they would go against, they'd come back and try and prosecute. So there were instances where it was tried, but it typically is lowest bidder, which is not always the best bidder. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you would have companies that are winning lowest bid. And in the long run, it ends up costing a lot more because the quality is taking longer. They can't manufacture this, so they have to subcontract something out to elsewhere. It's very convoluted. But like I said, the problem is there's already things in place in the government to ensure that there's not, you know, systemic racism across the board. And when Trump was in place and he was trying to give us more flexibility with employees, as in, you know, we're going to let you go if you're not a good worker or if you're, you know, misbehaving, whatever. No, unions came down and said, no, no, no. We're going to ensure that we're keeping these people on board. And I would have more people come into my office and talk to me about I'm being discriminated against. And a lot of the times it was non-minorities who were saying that.
Well, I absolutely believe it. I absolutely do believe it. I really do appreciate the call. Give us one final word, because we have a lot of these executive orders to go through. I don't want to get backed up too much, but what is your biggest concern seeing that list I just put up? Which one of those on the list concerns you the most?
Oh, Max, unfortunately, I don't think I could narrow it down to one. I would have to say it's all of them.
I know.
It's
really hard.
It's a very scary list. It's scary.
It really is. It really is. Well, thank you so much for your call, Suzanne. I really do appreciate it.
No problem.
I really do appreciate it.
Listen to you daily. I love you guys.
Oh, well, thank you. And the next time we talk about HR and government, definitely make sure that you call in, because it's very nice to have someone who was in that sphere and is no longer beholden to it.
Oh, trust me. I am so glad about that.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Take care. I really do appreciate it. Well, that was a great caller talking about, because again, most of the time when you have people in HR and the government that you don't get, they can't talk about it because they're still doing it. So that was a great, great call. I really do appreciate it. Anyone else who wants to call in, 888-441-1121 is the call-in number. Mr. Producer working overtime to try and weed out the bad callers. So everyone in the comment section, say good job, Josh. Say good job, Josh, in the comment section. So let's go ahead and put that image up again of the list. Let's see where we're at. We haven't even gotten through that much. That's why this is a two-hour show. Federal Workforce Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Executive Order. So that's what we just talked about, right? That's what we just talked about, this idea that we want to make sure that the federal workforce is diverse. Anyone who's ever worked in the federal government knows that it is. I mean, there has not been there's no structural racism. Like, people believe that the federal government is just racist to its core and that they only hire white people. That isn't true, especially when you get into things like defense and national security, where you really do want people who have familial ties. They speak foreign languages, right? There's an incentive to hiring people. I applied. I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to say it anymore. I applied for an internship with the NSA years back when I was in college, to do Arabic interpreting, back when I was very good at Arabic. And I lost out on the position to people who were native speakers. Makes sense, right? They've spoke it their entire lives. They can interpret much better than me. I only had 4 years in college. So there are definitely times where you want people, you want a diverse background. And I understand the notion that diversity is good. I agree. Diversity is good. Diversity, not just of skin color, but of religious views, of political persuasions, right? Diversity of thought. The left loves to talk about diversity, but they stop after skin color. You notice that? They stop after skin color, sexual orientation, and religious views. They don't actually talk about political diversity or diversity of thought. They want none of that. None of that. Only the skin color. It's the only diversity that they care about. So we just talked about that. It's a no, we're going to make federal government more diverse. Wow. So let's put that image up and let's see what the next one on the list is. Biden's going to send an immigration bill to Congress. Interesting. He's going to send an immigration bill to Congress. I wonder how that's going to go. He's going to send an immigration bill to Congress. Now, he hasn't been in government for 4 years. And when he was in government, he was just a vice president. Vice presidents don't actually do a whole lot. And likewise, Joe Biden didn't do a whole lot. So he's going to come in on day one and submit not a comprehensive bill, but a large amnesty-centric bill to Congress. He didn't write this. Some kind of lobbyists wrote this. Special interest groups wrote this. And go ahead and put up my screen, Mr. Bruce. This is from the AP published today. Biden to propose 8-year citizenship path for immigrants. Now, we're seeing lots of different numbers floating around. We're seeing one number saying it's 11 million. The other number we've been seeing is 22 million. 22 million illegal aliens potentially getting amnesty. Now, he says 8 years, that Congress will probably make it 4. But the important thing about this is not going to be a comprehensive immigration bill. What does that mean? Comprehensive immigration reform typically was a give and take. Historically, when you heard someone say comprehensive immigration reform, it meant reforming our immigration system to allow people who are illegally in the country to get legal status, while simultaneously closing loopholes that illegal aliens have abused and securing the border to make sure more won't come in. And that's always been kind of the agreement between Democrats and establishment Republicans. Conservatives never really liked this, but establishment Republicans. The logic being, if you're going to dangle this amnesty offer to 22 million illegal aliens, people who have no documentation, they're undocumented, as the left loves to call them. They have no proof of when they entered or exited the country. Right? They have no documentation. If you dangle that without closing the border, without closing the loopholes, without actually enforcing our immigration laws and deporting new border crossers, that 22 million number is going to tick up, because you're basically telling the whole world, anyone who steps one foot onto U.S. soil, I'm going to give you a pathway to American citizenship, and you're going to jump the line over everyone who's been waiting. It's insane. Comprehensive immigration reform, for all of its faults, at least recognize you cannot offer amnesty without also having border security, because it would be insanity. There'd be a rush at the border. There'd be a rush like we've never seen before. And what do we have going on right now? We have a rush on the border like we've never seen before. We have a caravan of illegal aliens making their way to the United States, leaving Honduras, crossing through Guatemala to enter the United States. And we'll play this. I'll have to pull it off my phone and send it. I thought I already sent it to Mr. Producer. We have a video of one of the illegal aliens in that caravan saying that he's going because Joe Biden says it's going to be okay, that Joe Biden invited them. So therefore, that's why they're going. So I'm going to make sure I pull that up and send it to Mr. Producer, because I saw it last night and I was shocked. Absolutely shocked about it, that they're actually admitting in the caravan, the people in the caravan who speak good English are going before a camera and admitting that they're going because Biden said that they can come in. Absolutely incredible. So I'm going to try and find that if I can. If not, I might need Mr. Producer to find it. Trying to scroll through my phone, see if I have it. We'll find that on the other side of the break and get it to you. But we are only not even halfway through Joe Biden's day one executive orders. And again, we talked to Suzanne, what scares her the most, and she doesn't know. She can't put her finger on it. It's all equally bad. I mean, the left howled when Donald Trump said that he was just going to rescind Barack Obama's executive orders. The left howled that that's all Trump ever wanted to do. And here on day one, Joe Biden, his approach to healing the nation, bringing the country together, is to revoke pretty much everything that Donald Trump did. And if he can't do it on his own, he's sending a request to Congress to do it for him. Pretty incredible stuff. So we're going to come back on the other side of this hour with some footage from the caravan. Trying to pull it up right now. Footage from the caravan, footage from that person in the caravan saying that he wants to come because Joe Biden invited him. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back on the other side of this really quick break.
Ronald Reagan famously said that our freedoms are never more than a generation away from extinction. Conservative Daily exists to make sure that never happens. With our community of 700,000 members, we fight every day to hold Congress's feet to the fire and stop them from surrendering our rights and freedoms. The fight to take this country back is not over. Please join our movement right now by going to conservative-daily.com and clicking the subscribe button to sign up for our free call to action newsletters. We have a chance to save this country, but only if we all work together. Again, this is conservative-daily.com, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button at the top.